Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello and welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, your weekly pod to help you earn, save and make more money. My name is Michelle Baltazar, the editor-in-chief here at Money Magazine. Thank you for joining us. Exchange-traded funds, or ETFs. How to use it, how other people use it, and what's the catch? We're joined today by the Deputy Head of Investments and Capital Markets at Van Eck, Jamie Hanna, to tell us all about this. And hopefully, by the end of this episode, you have an idea of how to get started if you are considering buying or investing in ETFs in the new year. Jamie, thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, first of all, I just want to congratulate Van Eck Australia. Your company's just been awarded the gold winner of our 2025 Best of the Best Fixed Interest Traded Fund. So I feel like there's celebrations all around.
Oh, there certainly is. When the award came back to the office, there was people clapping. There was a lot of delight. We're delighted to win awards.
Yes, and especially for this asset class as well, we have a lot of money readers and listeners talk to us about. Michelle, can you talk more about fixed income, talk about bonds? And this is a really kind of, if arguably, a cost-efficient way of getting into the asset class if you don't know anything about government bonds or how they work, right?
No, absolutely. And fixed income is one of those areas where individual investors can't buy a bond. It's very difficult. You need to be a high net worth individual. So a mum and dad can't go down the street or go to their broker or financial advisor and actually buy bonds. So yes, having an ETF that, has a number of bonds within it is opening up that new asset class to investors.
And to give our listeners a bit of context, tell us a bit more about Van Eck, how much money you manage and kind of the depth and breadth of the funds that you offer.
So at the moment, we have 43 funds listed on the ASX across every major asset class. So we have everything from commodities to share funds, international share funds. We even have Bitcoin, but also, as mentioned, we have bond funds as well. So we cover a full range of what we'd call asset classes. And at the moment, we're managing about $21.5 billion worth of assets within those 43 funds.
That is insane. That's a lot of money.
It is indeed. It's a lot of zeros on screen.
And I remember that Van Eck, being a global company, you opened up shop here in Australia back in 2013. So you're more than a decade old in Australia.
Yes. So we set up in 2013 here, but obviously Van Eck in the US had been operating since about the mid-1950s. So there's a lot of history within the firm, and they had been managing ETFs in the US since about 2006. So the firm has a long history going back as far as ETFs go globally, and we've got well over $100 billion globally under management.
Jesus, you can't put all of that stuff, all of that under the bed, can you?
Oh,
that's
absolutely
just a lot
not.
Of money. So let's get straight to it. First of all, let's talk about popular ETFs or the ETFs that people are really comfortable investing in. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yes. One of our flagship funds, essentially, has our Quality International Fund. It's under the ticker QUAL. And that is very much a global equity fund that invests in a lot of the companies you would generally know. Invests in things like Apple, Microsoft, just to name a few big tech companies. It has things like Visa and MasterCard. It has a lot of companies that really have a big global footprint that most investors around the world would know, but might not go in and buy. So that fund has really been a stellar performer over the past 10 years since we've launched it. And from our point of view, it really just focuses on quality companies. And quality companies are companies that have low financial debt, high return on equity, and stable year-on-year earnings growth. Now, what that really means is the company's been around for a while, it's profitable, and it's continued to be profitable over a number of years. And that has really performed well over the past decade in the growth environment which we've been in. And I think it really shows in terms of our performance on those funds.
And that is quite contrary to the popular belief that a lot of Aussie investors will only invest in Aussie shares, ETFs, for example. Do you feel like the industry has grown up and now we're really very comfortable around international shares?
I think that is one of the biggest growing parts within the investment industry in Australia. So yes, Australians have by and large bought Australian shares initially, and then they were certainly buying Australian ETFs, which which had Australian underlying shares in it. But Australians as a whole have, you know, over the past 50 years, been significantly underinvested in international shares and international bonds, for example. So giving them easy access to a fund that has international shares in it has really, you know, been a driving force for financial advisors and stockbrokers to help recommend that. So they, if you went in and seen a financial advisor now, they are more likely to recommend an international equity ETF, put it into your portfolio. So some people might already hold BHP or ANZ shares, for example, but they're not holding much in terms of investments outside of Australia. So the Qual ETF, for example, is an easy way for investors to gain access to a whole 300 international shares from around the world in one single trade.
Now, this sounds like an obvious question, but for someone who is new to the world of ETFs, what is the cost of entry? So is it $500? Is it $5,000? What would be a way to buy them?
So there is actually no minimum. It really depends on the broker that you use. So to buy an ETF, it's an exchange-traded fund, and that means it's listed on the ASX. And to actually buy something that's listed on the ASX, you need to have a stockbroker or a financial advisor that can actually do that for you. And with a broker, it can be an online broker, right? So long as you can buy a share, you can buy an ETF. And from that point of view, I guess, really, you know, it's you pay the brokerage. So the brokerage is whatever, you know, your broker charges you. And those fees have come down a lot these days, as you're probably aware. Some people can do a trade for less than $20. But when you actually purchase the ETF, there'll be a small spread on screen. So, you know, it might be trading at $9.99 and $10.01. There's 2 cents difference between that. So it might cost you that spread to purchase the ETF. Apart from that, there's a management fee that comes through, but you don't pay that directly to the company. So once you bought your position, the performance of the ETF is freely available on all websites, on any form of media that you get access to your share data, and you can see exactly how it's performing.
Gone are the days when you have an exclusive relationship with a broker and you have to call them and you have to specify what you want and you discuss it. This can all be done online. And as you've pointed out, there is no minimum fee.
No, there isn't. And there's certain platforms available these days, not just brokerage, that actually cater to very small investment sizes. So they actively will take things at like $50. So you can build up a portfolio from really tiny amounts these days, which you couldn't do in the past.
So building a portfolio, I know that a lot of our readers tell me, Michelle, I have a full-time job, I'm busy, I just want something that gives me passive income. So now they want to build a portfolio that provides them with that passive income. I know that you have clients that represent $21.5 billion, but without naming specific client portfolios, can you give us an idea on what a typical starter portfolio would look like?
Yes, for any portfolio, no matter what stage you're in, be it in retirement phase or, you know, just starting out in investment world in your 20s, diversification is key. I mean, you hear about that, and that means you shouldn't put all your eggs into one basket and just buy one ETF. There is no one best ETF that will fit anyone's needs. So realistically, what you need to do is have a well-diversified portfolio, and that means you want something in global shares, you want something in Australian shares, you want something in fixed income. And really, it'll come down to your, you know, your risk profile. Someone who's 85 years old is going to want a lot less risk in their portfolio than someone who's in their 20s trying to build it up. So from that perspective, generally speaking, the more risk you want in the portfolio, the more share ETFs you would have in your portfolio. And if you're really trying to lower the risk, you'd probably have more fixed income, so more bond ETFs in your portfolio. So from that perspective, it's a matter of just building out a diversified portfolio of international shares and everything that fits your personal needs so that you can generate the income. And if we just break it down quickly into each of the different kind of sectors, something in the ASX 200, generally speaking, if you bought something broad-based, pays about 3.5%, right? If you go into international shares, you're not really getting any. The dividend yields are around 1% to 2%. So when you're building this portfolio for income, you really need to factor in, you know, how much growth, because earning $500 today is completely different to earning $500 in 10 years' time. So you still need to generate some growth in your portfolio, and that's where shares provide income but also growth, whereas bonds, very, you know, generally speaking, less capital gain in your investment.
I think it's important to go back to this idea of diversification. So, for example, you can't just buy, let's say, healthcare ETFs, because if you're a doctor or a nurse, you're comfortable investing in that, but you definitely want to spread it across the different types of asset class. Now, I like that point about the different types of return. I think people don't really understand what that is, 3% versus 1%. And of course, our favorite word, inflation, and what that means as well to your portfolio. So, okay, let's pretend I have my friend Jan. Jan has $5,000, and now she's going to put $2,000 in an international shares ETF, $2,000 in an Australian shares ETF, and $1,000 in a fixed income ETF. Okay, I'm trying to get your reaction right now as an investor for 20 years. It's like, oh my God, what are those numbers? But even something as simple as that, do you think that provides a starter investor with kind of a foundation to learn how the market works?
Look, there is no right and wrong portfolio. You hear about professionals who've been doing it for 20 years and they still lose money. So that portfolio being international, you know, shares, local shares, and some bonds, that is a good point to start from a diversification point of view. So long as, you know, they're broad-based, you know, like an international equity ETF and a broad-based Australian equity ETF, then they're already going to cover a lot of the market. So within that ETF alone, you're already getting diversification. You're getting diversification across the sectors. You're getting diversification across all the different companies. So if one company, you know, really falls quite sharply, it won't necessarily affect your portfolio in a great way. So any form of diversification that you just said works perfectly. And for someone starting out, it's probably the best way to really get their foot in the door so they understand exactly what they're buying and how the finance world works.
But let's be honest though, with the international shares, there's a huge exposure to the tech sector. And that's a good thing, but that can also be a bad thing. How do you explain the ups and downs of the market?
So let's think about this year alone. The international ETFs have generally performed very strongly. The US this year, you know, the S&P 500, you might have heard of that. It's the biggest 500 companies in the US. It's up nearly 30% this year. That is a huge number. That is across 500 different companies. And across that, the average is, you know, nearly 30%. In Australia, the ASX 200 is only up 10% this year. If you didn't invest in the international ETF, you would have missed a huge amount of upside in your portfolio. So if you just stayed in Australia, 10% is great, but actually there was 30% there on the other side. Now, obviously, markets can turn as well. We all know about crashes. And so, you know, there's every chance that, you know, the US or any of these can fall, you know, just as much as they rise in a bad year. But when you're diversified, you're getting the opposite side. So, you know, if the US did happen to fall 30%, then maybe Australia would only fall 10%. There's no saying we'd follow them exactly. So the fact is that no matter how you think about this, different investments offer different returns and different risk profiles. So, you know, I personally think that tech's overweight, yes, but if you've been underweight tech over the past 10 years, your portfolio wouldn't have performed as well as others.
That's it. Exactly. So now we've built this starter portfolio, if you like, and my friend Jan, the $5,000 is now up to, let's say, $6,000, and she wants to take out $300. So what are the opportunities there for Jan to withdraw that gain from her portfolio?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, global markets move, you know, stock markets go up and down, as we all know. But if Jan is in a profitable position, then she can make a decision, right? She can either leave it where it is, and hopefully over time, it will compound. So if you receive a dividend, there's an option to reinvest that dividend straight back into that underlying portfolio. So you can either get more of the ETF that you're holding or more of the share that you might be holding. So it's called dividend reinvestment plan, and it will help build up over time. But what you're doing in lieu of that is not taking a cash dividend. So if you know, part of your portfolio has gone up, but you're receiving a cash dividend, well, what are you going to do with the cash? You might want to reinvest it into a different ETF to add more diversification. So if she's going to take that $300, then one, she needs to assess if there's any tax consequence to that, which she'll have to do at the end of the year. And second of all, what she's going to do with the money. Maybe she's going on a holiday, that's fine. But if she's pulling it out to, I guess, invest in another asset or another thing, then she needs to decide beforehand what she's going to invest in.
Very quickly now, there are these admin stuff that you have to do when you have a portfolio of ETFs. One being the tax component of that and how that impacts you and your personal tax rate, and also the accounting and the bookkeeping. What's your advice to someone who's absolutely new to this and they just want to know the basics?
Yeah, so there's only two things that you really need to understand. When you buy an ETF, for example, at the end of the year, at the end of the tax year, you'll get a statement direct from the ETF issuer that owns and runs the ETF, and it will give you all the tax information, which you can either give to an accountant, or it breaks down the individual pieces that go into your tax return if you're doing it yourself. So you have to wait for that statement, and it outlines, you know, the key details that go in your tax return. The other aspect to it is if you've sold or bought an ETF or shares during the year, then you would have made a profit or a loss. So you need to know what price you originally bought at and what price you sold at. And that will obviously result in a profit or a loss, and that needs to go into your tax return as well. And so you need some basic, you know, I guess, bookkeeping or some record keeping to be able to maintain that, but it's not onerous. So long as you know prices you bought and sold and you wait for your end of year statement, then doing your tax return should be relatively easy.
Well said. Anything else that our listeners should know about investing in ETFs?
Look, I don't think there's anything that you should know. I think, you know, as we said, needs to be diversified within your portfolio. You need to assess your risk options of where you are at the moment. And overall, I think, you know, you need to ensure that you set up with a good and reputable financial advisor or broker for execution, and don't pay too many fees. I mean, the reason why ETFs have done so well over the past decade is that they're very low fee products. So you don't want to be paying extra fees on the other side to people who aren't providing you a good service.
Thanks a lot for that, Jamie. Thanks for coming to the studio. And once again, congratulations on your best of the best win.
Thank you very much.
Now, before we go, if you enjoyed listening to the Friends with Money podcast or this episode, please share it with your friends and family. Do you have a finance question or you want to ask Jamie an ETF question? Send it to me on podcast@moneymag.com.au. Until next, I'm Michelle Baltazar. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.